May it please the court, my name is Kyle Drennan. I represent the appellant, Teresa Scanlon. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please. Your Honor, this case presents sort of an odd dismissal for insufficient proof of service. The defendant, Townsend, brought on a motion.
Why was it odd?
It's odd because the court dismissed the case for lack of proof of service, and the defense motion was to dismiss for insufficient service of process. So there's a distinction here between whether we had adequate proof of the service or whether the service was actually valid. So there's two separate issues here.
I think we're mostly interested in whether the service was valid.
Okay. Well, then I will just briefly cover the proof of service argument, and then I'll move on. Courts can't dismiss a case for insufficient proof of process. That's what the court did here. CR 4G7 states as much. And aside from that, both the defendant and the defendant's attorney have conceded that the defendant was actually handed the papers by the father. So that's all. I'll just leave it at that. As far as actual service of process goes, RCW 4.28.080 allows for you know, service just by handing papers to a defendant. There's no requirement that.
Well, there are some requirements. They're not many about who hands papers.
Correct, Your Honor. Apologize. You have to be over 18. You have to be competent to serve process. And there's no dispute here that the defendant's father, Mr. Pine, met those requirements under the civil rules.
Well, he's over 18.
Right, he's over 18. And then he issued a declaration wherein he stated that he was competent and he's not a party to the action. His daughter is. So therefore, he meets the civil rule requirements to serve process. He's not barred from serving process in this case.
And his declaration said he was competent to do what?
Testify. And so basically what we have here is our process server went to the defendant's old residence, handed him the papers, and the defendant's father said, I will give the summons complaint to the defendant.
And he did that within the 90 days.
He did.
And then his daughter testified that she received those the summons and the complaint within 90 days.
Correct. And that's part of the proof of service. The defense argument is simply that this was sort of accidental or fortuitous service.
Well, that's because you have those two Division III cases with Judge Sweeney writing.
Correct, Your Honor.
And so you're relying on the Brown, it has two names, but
Brown Edwards.
Brown Edwards.
Right.
And then the other side is relying on Guerrion.
Right.
Okay.
And this case is actually distinguishable from both of those cases.
Why don't you tell us why?
The case is distinguishable because the defendant's father actually stated to our process server that he would give the documents to the defendant. And then he did.
So which case are you talking about where you're trying to distinguish? Why don't you just talk about one at a time?
Sure. sorry, Your Honor. I was actually talking about the case that's at bar here, and the defendant's father agreed.
We know the facts. So now let's talk about how those facts are like Brown Edwards and not like Guerrion, or like Guerrion.
Let's talk about Guerrion, since that's the one I'm trying to distinguish.
Okay, so you're talking about Guerrion.
Mm-hmm. In Guerrion, the process server walked up to the defendant's old house and asked the defendant's father if the defendant lived there. The defendant's father said no. The process server handed the papers and walked away. And then several days later, the defendant's father delivered the papers to the defendant. There was no discussion by the defendant's father that he would give the papers to the defendant.
Well, but Judge Sweeney, in writing Brown Edwards, distinguished Guerrion and said the argument that was made in Brown Edwards had not been made in Guerrion. Isn't that right?
That's correct. And the Guerrion opinion is a little bit unclear on this point, simply because it's difficult to really gather what arguments were made and what arguments weren't.
Well, but it's the same author who says that there was not an argument that was made in Guerrion.
That's correct, and that's a point that was made in our briefing. And if that argument wasn't made in Guerrion, then I think Brown Edwards is more persuasive here. This isn't the kind of service of process that's been argued you know, it's only been argued twice at the appellate level that's resulted in a published opinion at this point.
Could I ask you a question just to clarify my understanding of the law? And I realize that you're not, this isn't like dispositive of your appeal, but I'm just looking at the 4G7, it's where you quoted it as saying failure to make proof of service does not affect the validity of the service. And are you saying that the trial judge didn't understand that, or?
Yeah, if you read the actual order, it says that the case was dismissed due to insufficient proof of service of
process. What does it affect then? If you don't make proof of service, I mean, why bother to make it if it doesn't affect the validity of the service? What is the consequence of failing to make proof of service, if anything?
The plaintiff has a duty to demonstrate affirmatively that service was valid in the case. It's not required under the civil rules, I think, pretty clearly. You have to have a declaration of service from the actual person serving. There's other ways to do it. And I think that even without the proof of service, the court can't dismiss because of insufficient proof of service. The court can dismiss due to insufficient service, but not due to insufficient proof under the civil rule.
Well, but didn't you have proof here? Because one of the ways to demonstrate proof of service is to have a deposition where the person admits that they received service?
Yes, Your Honor. And the defendant did that
in
this case.
So, I mean, isn't the argument there was proof of service here?
There was, but the other argument here is that under the civil rules, CR 4G7 states that lack of proof of service doesn't affect the validity of the service.
But you have proof of service here, and your argument is that service was sufficient.
Right.
That's your argument.
Correct.
And that Brown Edwards is the case we should look to.
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Mike Abrahamson. I'm the attorney for the respondent. Let me begin by saying we are not arguing lack of proof of service. We don't believe that lack of proof of service is a basis for dismissing this case. We are arguing that there was no service, that there was, under the statutes, that there is no service. What happened in this case is
Why was there no service?
Because there's no compliance with the statute in terms of how you serve somebody. Under the statute, you serve somebody by giving it to them personally or by leaving it at their usual abode with somebody of suitable age. Those are the two criteria that the legislature have adopted.
Well, I think the argument is that Ms. Townsend was personally served.
That's the argument, but we say that she was not personally served.
Okay, so tell us why she or how she was not.
We have admitted that she received the documents. We have admitted that. We haven't admitted that she was served. What we have admitted is that, yeah, she got the documents from her father within the tolling period. She did get the documents. But the rule is not actual receipt of the summons and complaints. That's never been the rule. That's because of the statute. You look at the statute. Statute does not say prove that the defendant received the summons and complaint. If that's what the statute read, we wouldn't be here. What the statute says is the plaintiff has the burden to serve the plaintiff either personally or at their usual abode. What they're trying to do here is argue fortuitous service. This is the point that Garen made.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? This is what happens when you put something in the passive voice. It says the summons shall be served by delivering a copy thereof. It doesn't say the plaintiff shall serve this or cause the summons to be served. It says the summons shall be served.
Right. And serve, again, service.
What is the subject of that sentence? Grammatically speaking, there isn't one. That's what you do with the passive voice. You eliminate the identification of the person who is acting. You just announce that an action has taken place.
You're really testing my English on that one, but it comes back to the statute.
That's what we live for.
of how you serve. Is personally serve, or you use it at, or leave it at their usual abode with a suitable person. What they're trying to argue here, and the reason I say that is look at the affidavits that were sworn by the process server hired by the plaintiff. If you look at those, yeah, there's some discussion with the father, but then the process server goes on to say affirmatively that I have served the defendant, Ms. Townsend, by leaving them with her father at the defendant's, Ms. Townsend's, usual abode. They don't say, oh, I gave them to Mr. Pine, who the process server incorrectly calls Mr. White. The affidavit of service doesn't say, oh, we gave it to Mr. White, and he promised to give it to Ms. Townsend. That's not what the affidavit of service from process service does.
You're basically saying, I guess, that it's improper to skip a step. I mean, in other words, if the plaintiff starts out to serve somebody with by means of a process server, then that's how the service has to take place. You can't go on in line and then have the father involuntarily impressed into the role of being a process server without specifically asking him to do it.
This is what the Karen case is all about, is that you cannot cure defective service. It's defective at the first instance by fortuitous service later on in the process.
Well, that's silly. I'm sorry. If service is had, service is had. I can leave it with a cocktail waitress.
You can't.
The cocktail waitress hands it to her. That's it. Service has been had.
You cannot do that, Your Honor. And that's because of the law. And the law says that.
Well, the law is going to be what we say it is. We're ultimately what the Supreme Court says it is.
That is true, Your Honor.
He said it. Other than Judge Sweeney, I'd like to hear it.
Judge Sweeney has...
Case. What is it? Carrot? Garion. Oh, what you were just saying, the one that says that you can't have fortuitous...
That you cannot cure defective service by fortuitous delivery.
Well, how do you...
That's the Garion case?
Yes.
How do you reconcile the Garion case with Brown Edwards?
Well, you're going to have to do that for us, Your Honors, and the reality is we argued...
Well, that's because you can't, or...
We argued to the trial judge that Brown Edwards is wrongly decided. You look at Judge Sweeney's... writing, and I do know where he wrote that the issue
had
was not considered in Garion.
Right.
I believe that to be untrue if you read Garion case.
Well, he's the author.
Yeah, you would think that's true. And when you read the Garion case, you'll see that that issue was raised in Garion. And I can point you to where it's raised in Garion. Just give me a moment. Here I'm reading from the Garion case. The argument that defective substitute service is cured if the summons is fortuitously delivered by a person who is over the age of 18 and not a party to the lawsuit boils down to the argument that actual notice should be sufficient. And Judge Gross, I give you that's your argument, but Garion specifically disapproves of that and says that that's not true.
I don't have to care, as a matter of fact, unless you can convince me why I should, because it's precedent from the court that is at the same level as this court, and if it's not convincing, we won't follow it. That's the burden you have today with respect to this. It seems to me the statute, then we're going to get into a definition argument about fortuitous, because it isn't fortuitous service. It was purposeful. The father gave the pleadings to the defendant in this case. That's not fortuitous. Fortuitous would be if she found them laying around and picked them up. And then we'd have all the problems that the case law is replete with.
Right.
Yes, I got them. No, I didn't get them. People denying it, all of that. Now, I don't see that circumstance here where you have a witness who testifies, I purposely gave those documents to my daughter. Now, he perhaps shouldn't have, but he did.
Well, it's fortuitous in the sense that it happens. The definition of fortuitous that I would offer to the court is by chance or by lucky, by happenstance. It's not like Mr. Pine got the documents and then decided that his role in this whole process was to make sure that his daughter was properly served.
But fortuitous isn't in the rule. I mean, that's a word that was used by a judge writing an opinion. You got to talk about... what the rule says. It says the summons shall be served by delivering a copy to the defendant personally. I'm leaving out the intervening words, but that's what it says. Why do those words not describe what happened here? The summons was served by delivering a copy to the defendant personally.
Well,
that happened.
I go back to look at it in this situation. The legislature has said that somebody is personally served by giving it to them in person, or by leaving it at their usual abode with somebody of suitable age. What this court is now saying is that it would be fine service to leave it at somebody's usual abode with a visitor, and that's never been the case law. You could now leave it with a visitor who in turn hands it over to the defendant. And
well, that's exactly what happened, in a way.
In
but
a
I
way.
Mean, it's you can do it personally, or you can do it by leaving a copy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But
and in fact, it isn't you. It's it shall be done. It is silent as to who has to do it.
Well, we would ask the court to go back to what the dissent said in Brown Edwards' case, that the service burden should remain on plaintiffs to give formal notice of suit for the purpose of alerting defendants of the necessity of a formal response.
So that's keeping the argument. That's a policy argument. Who was the dissent writer, by the way?
Brown.
Do you remember?
Judge Brown.
Ah, okay.
Who, and that's in keeping with the wording of the statute. And I keep going back to that, I know, but it says you have to serve personally or at the person's usual abode with somebody of suitable age.
Ooh. You are headed back to wherever your office is, and I know you're going to pass by somebody I need served, and I hand you the pleading and say, please serve Smith on your way back. And you go by and you say, here, Smith, here, serve. Is that fortuitous? No, it's purposeful. Is it personal service? You're arguing that it wouldn't be, because you're not a, quote, process service.
It would be.
Process
it's
service is the most unreliable source of information we have in the annals of the law.
I'm going to use my remaining points, I guess, to try to. Okay. I'm going to go to a sports analogy, which might not be a good analogy, but say you're playing football and you throw the football to somebody and the person doesn't catch the football. It's an incomplete pass. Under the plaintiff's argument, somebody would be able to pick up the football, give it back to the person, and now that would be a completed pass. That's what they're trying to do here. They're trying to cure defective service. I'm saying it's defective service because what does the affidavit of service from the process server say? It says, I gave it to somebody of suitable age at the defendant's usual abode. That's not true.
Can't you usually make a pass as long as it keeps going forward?
I think that's rugby, Your Honor.
That's a question of whether the ball's dead or not.
Right. That is the question.
So if you don't understand that, we're done, I guess, with the sports analogy.
Oh, I like the sports analogy.
I would say the ball is dead.
And that's the call.
I would say the ball
me.
Is dead. Yeah.
It was a big deal, a couple of Super Bowls.
We are saying the ball is dead. You cannot cure defective service by somebody else fortuitously delivering it. In the future.
All those quarterbacks are just delivering football.
Well, if the policy of, I guess that's not a bad analogy in the sense, but if the policy is to avoid those kinds of disputes, which may be what Judge Sweeney was trying to get at without saying it, which is the difficulty, then your argument, then we begin to embellish the argument and get back to what we think the legislature may have done with the policy decision.
Yeah,
and
Judge Brown's point.
Debate. Judge Brown's point.
Yeah.
Right.
Don't get into this.
We're asking you to affirm the trial court and Guerin and the dissent in Brown Edwards. Thank you, Your Honor.
Well argued. Tough one to stand up.
No. Oh.
Don't do it.
I wasn't going to say anything
Don't
anyway.
Don't do it.
Thank you, Your Honors.
No.